Good morning, everyone. My name is Jeff Hancock, and this is the CoinPass podcast where we talk crypto, finance, fintech, and trading. We have a very special topic today. Today, we're talking about predicting markets with crowd-based AI. And my guest today joins me from Pink, which is the 0% fee wealth management app powered by the wisdom of the crowd's AI. They achieve this with their unique model and symbiotic financial system between retail investors and financial institutions. From Pink is Rupert Bakersfield. He has been building startups for over 10 years now, and in 2017 he got involved in the blockchain industry by eventually co-founding Pink, the world's first people-powered investment platform with 30,000 users that work collectively to direct a single portfolio for the benefit of all the users. Rupert, thank you for joining us today. Welcome to the podcast.
Morning, Jeff. Thank you very much for having us.
No, thank you very much for coming along. I mean, it's an exciting project. You know, we've known each other for nearly going 2 years now. We constantly bump into each other at various events, and you're always wearing the coolest, pinkest jacket ever, which always, you know, obviously a standout part of the brand. You're always literally wearing the brand on your sleeve, which I absolutely love. And
it is a staple. It's the staple of the Pink wardrobe, that's for sure.
That's great. Oh, I think it's absolutely awesome. I mean, your career, I mean, we get a lot of people in the show that have worked in either the finance industry or in tech or in some kind of parallel, but you've been mostly in the startups world previous to kind of working in Pink. And kind of what made you first kind of make that jump from, you know, traditional fintech or traditional startup life into like blockchain and crypto?
I suppose I didn't see it as much of a jump as some other people kind of view it. In my eyes, you know, blockchain and crypto is finance, it is fintech. You know, we need to obviously separate out blockchain from that, because blockchain is technology on its own. The crypto is fundamentally, it is the new form of finance, and I'm a massive believer that crypto will, you know, drive or at least some form of digital currency, if not our own fiat currencies are already digital. The financial revolution's going forward. But yeah, what I suppose in my kind of career, I've always enjoyed, you know, the start of things. I've always enjoyed the start of a new company or a new kind of venture. With crypto, it really felt to me, especially in 2017, that this was part of a new revolution, and that things were going to change quickly for the better. And at the time, I think, you know, I felt like nothing could stop us, you know, like it was so exciting. Obviously, you know, since then the bear market has happened, and like a lot of people are saying, oh yeah, we're changing the world, I've actually just turned back to go and work for their normal jobs at Walmart or wherever. There were a whole bunch of people that joined the revolution, for want of a better word, who actually didn't believe in it. They just wanted to make a quick buck. And I think you know, that's damaged us as an industry per se, but
I agree,
it's still, for me, that was why I bought in. It was the opportunity for change, the opportunity for things to get better for everybody, not just our tiny little community.
Exactly. And something you mentioned there, which is actually part of our own vision over here at coinpass.com, the banking and finance and crypto are not, you know, they're not different from each other. It's just kind of the newest evolution of it. You know, we're trying to blur that line between banking and crypto to be a single digital layer, because you know, it's an evolution of the tech and transparency and the way that we value and see money, which kind of makes me, you know, I suppose, giggle, wary, you know, being in this particular, you know, generation right now. Is, you know, sometimes you always think about, you know, you get to your mid-30s, you know, we all get there eventually, people, is, you know, you kind of think, you know, what was it like for this type of person back in the 30s or the 50s or whenever, you know, whenever we weren't alive. And, you know, how we see currency now, you know, from just in my lifetime, you know, we've seen, you know, the 1 and 2 cent coin in Australia completely disappear. You know, the idea of coinage and paper money in our lifetime may disappear. The way that we see finance now these days is, you know, Apple Pay, Google Pay, tapping a card. We don't carry cash that often anymore. Our experience with money is becoming purely digital anyway, numbers on a screen. Absolutely. And our children, the next generation, are going to be like that scene out of Back to the Future. It's like, you have to use money with your hands? Like, really?
Yeah. What I've been absolutely fascinated by, actually, was how fast the COVID scenario has pushed that. For some reason, you know, cash became literally dirty because there was no way of really cleaning it in a medical sense. And so even like the fruit sellers down my high street here finally changed over to you know, a contactless pay solution. They will still, some of them will still accept cash because they, you know, that's what they're used to. But ultimately, you know, the amount of places that I go to now and they have signs saying no cash is staggering. I'm really surprised. It's all gone kind of contactless, and so by going contactless, it's really only a very small step to go from, well, I'm paying in £1, well, now I can pay in one digital pound. Well, that that digital pound is a representation of something else, you know. So
also allows a digital pound to move around a lot more frictionless as well when we start dealing with you know, increased bandwidths, you know, open banking, all of that kind of new tech, where that £1 can go a lot further than it used to as well, which I think will, you know, over the long term, be very, very healthy. But so kind of let's get into it a little bit with your, you know, one thing that kind of stood out specifically on your website and your offering is crowd-based AI. Can you explain to us what crowd-based AI is and kind of how it's, I suppose, implemented into the Pink product? Because I think that's a really, really interesting term.
So I mean, it's core to what we believe. So the core of Pink, and we're a zero fee wealth management platform, and there are other zero fee investment apps out there, Robinhood and Free Trade, and so on and so forth. The way we differ is that we have a single portfolio, and that portfolio is controlled by all of our users. So our users input their thoughts and as to how either individual assets are going to move or how a portfolio mix is going to best perform being put together, and they put that all into our app, and they get rewarded through gamification and points in our app, but they actually get rewarded in money every quarter if they do really well,
and that's on the performance of the portfolio.
Basically all that data supplies our AI. And our AI simply picks between the users based on their kind of prediction history and their performance history as to who is good and who's bad to listen to. I mean, the way we tend to think about it is that actually, if you take Goldman Sachs, and Goldman Sachs has 1,000 fund managers, and then there's one boss. And the boss just decides, okay, I'm going to listen to fund manager one today, and tomorrow I'm going to listen to fund manager 1,000. And the AI is the boss in this scenario, isn't it? It's just picking between our individual users. And then we combine that with our internal investment committee as well, just to make sure the AI is working in the right direction. And
it doesn't turn into that Microsoft bot that just goes on a big Twitter rant or something.
Absolutely. I mean, look, we're a young company, and we're dealing with money at the end of the day, so we don't want to. But
of course,
we want to shoot ourselves in the foot. And sometimes there are occasions when we're not sure about that. We're just going to stay out of the market. We're going to take an easier position or whatever.
So it's interesting. So there is, even when you know, your investment advisors might say otherwise, there's still sometimes an extremely bullish sentiment, maybe in the crowd.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll, what the AI is specifically looking for is individuals or small groups of individuals who are consistently correct on a consistent asset basis, or group of assets.
Right. So if you've got one trader, let's say like myself. I'm more of an investor. Yeah. I'm not a trader. I can look at charts. I don't enjoy it. But I, you know, I could be one of those stragglers at the end, looking to, like, don't follow his trades, always do the opposite.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, it can take the inverse position on what you're doing as well as the following what you do. What's been fascinating for us is as our user base has grown, as you mentioned, like 30,000 users, we're close to 40,000 now. That bio for you. We're growing super rapidly because people are, also believe in this. The whole method is, as I say, my kind of sign of time, it's working better together, investing better together. It's all about collaboration. And so, the point I wanted to make about that was, it's been interesting to see how our own methodologies have changed based on the data we've received. And because we moved originally, I wanted to make the point that we were focused quite a lot on crowd wisdom originally. And crowd wisdom and wisdom in crowds, which is what we do, are two very different things. One looks at the median of a group of people, and the other looks for wisdom inside that group of people. Right. And that's where we are.
That's really interesting. So let's come to that in a second. But what I mean, just so we get a really, really clear understanding, I mean, we've seen other platforms out there using AI, using machine learning to derive, signals or market direction, or they call market sentiment or even social sentiment. How are these, I suppose, different to your kind of crowd methodology? And how is that, how are those platforms kind of edging out kind of what you're doing? What's the real fundamental differences between those two?
Yeah, so the way we like to look at it is we have clean data and they have less clean data.
Yeah.
Because our clean data comes directly from our users. Right. So user A will say, this is, the price of Bitcoin is going to be $7,000 tomorrow or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. And so we have an individual person with an individual figure. We're not deriving that from Twitter. We're not pulling it in from Bloomberg trades. It's all from what our users think. Yeah.
And they're your direct users. They're not just looking at hashtags on Twitter or something like that.
Yeah. And the beauty of that is it obviously reduces down bias. So why that's important for us is that, if you get all your kind of like trades that from two or three different exchanges, for example, let's say you're deriving your AI from the trades that are happening on Binance and you have a direct API to understand that. And so you can forecast from there. That is a very biased community of they're all traders or investors on Binance in the first place, and B, they're all within inside the crypto community, and C, they are they're all on Binance, right? So they've all got massive biases there as to why they have done a trade like that. So your data input is biased. Ours, on the other hand, we could be having a housewife in New York comparing to an accountant over in Mumbai who neither of those are necessarily trading on a platform or investing on a platform. They're just providing the data to us. Yeah. And so the obvious question is, well, surely a housewife in New York is not very good at trading or investing. Our argument is that it doesn't really matter. Our AI is agnostic as to who is and isn't good. It just looks for performance history. So it might be that housewife actually every morning she gets up and she looks at her Coinbase account or CoinPass account and she goes, I'm going to make a prediction this way, and she has a small amount of crypto holdings from her husband or whatever said buy this, or her friend and said do that. And so she joined the Pink community just to predict and be part of the community and learn from our community about how the assets are better moving. And that way, because she's predicting on our community and she's getting feedback from people with inside it, but also our system, she is bettering her knowledge so that when she comes to make a trade on her own Coinbase CoinPass account, she can actually do it. She knows what she's doing, or what. She's far more confident in what she wants to do.
So with that kind of crowd-based wisdom, like you say, it's super clean data. It's people that are across multiple environments. You know, it's across multiple jurisdictions. Work habits. You know, it kind of goes further than just a singular platform. Look, you know, singular order book, which may or may not have different types of traders layered in there. So yeah, that's really cool. And I mean, how does this kind of differ from, you know, there are a lot of words kind of thrown around the space. So I suppose mostly for the benefit of listeners, how is that different to some sort of, I'd say, like machine learning as opposed to your crowd-based AI?
So essentially the way that we look at it, like machine learning and AI, that those terminologies get mixed up all the time
anyway. Yeah.
And it, you know, we tend to use AI as an explanation because people have heard of AI more than they've heard of machine learning. The way that we look at it is that machine learning tends to be a single algorithm, mm-hmm. That has the ability to learn or to control its own abilities over time. And AI is a combination of multiple different machine learning techniques combined together in order to create a far more intelligent system. Now, we're probably on the boundaries between ML and AI right now. We are combining our different methodologies together. Mm-hmm. We started off really very much in a machine learning environment, but now we're transitioning because, you know, we're 2 years old. We've got, you know, all these different algorithms now working together, training themselves, and then training a master algorithm as well.
Wow.
And that's the beauty of it. What I like to think of, the best way to explain AI, or my idea of what true AI is, and we are quite some way away from this because we don't have $700 million, but if you look at the Google DeepMind videos and you look at things like Google DeepMind playing Breakout, or there's a great documentary called AlphaGo on Netflix. I mean, it's just incredible. It's about, and that's pure, like, you've given this machine enough individual algorithms and enough data to kind of work out its base on like how to play a game, and then continually learn from playing that game, but moreover to play itself.
Yeah.
And that's where the exponential learning comes from. And it's super impressive. It's super
I've seen very, very, very similar. You mentioned the AlphaGo. They did something very, very similar with real-time strategy game called StarCraft. And you can actually, if you go into that now, a friend of mine actually showed me, you go into your settings and you tick a box saying, I am happy to contribute to this, you know, AI learning. And while it is, you know, it's gaming and it's StarCraft and it's very, very competitive in places like Korea and Asia and stuff like that. The reason it's using that particular type of game is because of the unlimited possibilities in terms of your unit composition, your base composition, your strategy of attacking the enemy, and ultimately how you win the game. And because there's so many permutations, just as you say, you know, feeding exponential amounts of data into it, it was learning how to play the game. Learning how to play it through every permutation, and then obviously the difference between a win and a loss, and, you know, which units would counter the others. And when it starts taking that and starts playing itself like a million times a day, there's no possible way a human can keep up with that. But it's also training the background AI, it's training the background platform at the same time. So it's not just, it's using the game as sort of like a medium, if you call it, to train itself, because it's a huge amount of data. It's a hugely complex, you know, system and scenario. But it's obviously taking all of that feedback in and creating something of a, you know, a learning algo in order to train itself. So then it could take that system and go and put it onto finance, or go and put it onto health, or go and put it onto oil exploration or something like that.
Yeah, and that's super exciting. Now, forgive me, Cost Center One has just arrived in the...
Good morning. We got two guests on the show. Good morning.
We have got two. Daddy's just recording a podcast. Can I... can we decide we'll talk to Mummy?
Mummy, where have they gone to? That's where the rock
Okay. All right. You go inside and talk to mummy. I'll be right inside as soon as I can. Okay. I'll see you in a moment. I'll be there as soon as I can, buddy. And
that's excellent.
Is the wonder of COVID working.
I know. I think we've all adapted exceptionally well, and I think you'll agree for the space that we both started in 2017 in London in the crypto and blockchain community. Seeing each other at all of these other kind of events and now kind of still seeing each other, through the whole COVID part of it, through WhatsApp, through these meetups, through all the online stuff. I kind of wonder, what has the space kind of got in store for us? We are, one of the largest, financial centers in the world. But the crypto community is small. And just like you say, people have kind of disappeared and gone back to normal work because they couldn't find a market or, the market happened, one of the two. So it is interesting to see the resilience of some of the markets and the resilience of some of these communities, even through, a pandemic like this that no one's technically gone through in their lifetime before.
Yeah, I think if I just split that up, if we look at the crypto community in general, I am, I'm really glad that a lot of the events have kind of died down, because there was a point when you felt like you had to go to all of these things.
I agree.
And it just took up so much time and not enough work was going on, and there was a lot of chat and not a lot of action.
Yeah.
And so that became, problematic in itself, but that kind of died away, during the bear market, and a lot of people kind of just got down to work, which is good. And so but following the London as a kind of a financial center and kind of going forward, I think honestly, I'm not worried about too much about the pandemic and how that's impacted London's financial centre. But I am concerned about Brexit, because we just still don't have so many answers around, passporting, for example. Right? What is going to happen between here in Europe and our regulations? Does that mean on December X date we just stop trading with all European users? There's been no guidance at all on that. The government have
we seem to have forgotten about this big meaty point of Brexit, because there's been other stuff to talk about. And same with us, we're very, very close now for our FCA registration and regulation with the FCA. Does that mean, come that December date, that we now have to go and get a secondary regulation and a secondary business in Estonia, Ireland, and somewhere else? So we can still serve European customers. This, like you say, it's almost like a cat in the bag that doesn't want to be let out at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the main reason why we don't know anything is the government is using our financial centre as a negotiation point. To say, look, it's as bad for Europe if they don't allow passporting as it is for the UK. Or maybe that they're trying to install some sort of tariff to charge the guys from Europe to use the Europeans. I don't know. But in any case, in the meantime, us in the industry, we are kind of flying blind somewhat, and just having to create mitigation tactics that may not happen or may be required very, very quickly.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be required very, very quickly. Then there's an entire industry on a handful of people going, we need this. And I think it's going to be challenging.
Yeah.
But I have got the belief that, the governments, all the good friends of those guys up in government right now, they all work in finance, and they're not going to let their friends suffer. And whilst I don't like that scenario, I'm not a fan of the Etonian kind of brotherhood, it will thankfully help us as a financial sector. And they recognize that is now has been for some time, it also is our biggest export, right? We are good at finance, and I suppose my biggest worry is what I don't want us to become is the tax haven island or something to that effect, where
I've heard that many of our around a lot,
Yeah, so many of our previous colonies, right, have become these financial tax havens, and they get a bit of a bad rep, right? They get they're seen as a bit of a slimy environment. I don't want London to become that. I mean, sure, there's some of the biggest money launderers in the world here, but they still get a very shiny front face on them. you know, so and it doesn't seem to impact the perceived quality of London as a financial centre.
Yeah. So I just wanted one last question, just to kind of wrap up the end there. I just want to come back to one of the taglines off your website. And you sure. mentioned it just earlier as well. You know, we talked about that wisdom in the crowd, not of the crowd, and also bias reduction, which I thought was really, really important as well. And so why, just as a final point, why do you think these two things are kind of key when we talked about crowd-based AI?
So bias reduction is super important because you know, when you have bias in a system, you obviously tend to lean one way or the other. There's a great example of this. If you use wisdom of crowds methodology, and you get a group of people who don't know anything about, they're non-experts, right? Mm-hmm. So let's say you get everybody in London to vote on the price of Bitcoin tomorrow. And in that group, yes, there are going to be some experts, but majority of those people are not going to know, right? And you're going to get some outlier effects. You're going to get people that say it's going to be $1 tomorrow. Some people are going to say it's going to be $100,000 tomorrow. I would obviously be on $100,000 dead. But the vast majority will be in and around the figure of where you would expect it to be. Now, if you do that as a big, wide open group, you are always, and this is just the natural mathematics behind crowd wisdom, you are always between 3 and 5% error margin of where it will actually be. It's very, very accurate. If you use just experts, and this is where bias comes into it, because experts are naturally biased one way or the other, you come between, I think it's 7 to 9% error margin. So that's I found that really, really interesting that you've got those, you know, you would think that the experts know more. And individually they do, but there are experts who are individually know less as well. And what defines an expert? You know, an expert is defined by somebody who is perceived to have more knowledge than one other person. But on an asset that moves like Bitcoin, unless you're an insider trading on that, or you have like a big whale tip or something to that effect, it's very difficult to define that. And I'd argue that with gold, and I'd argue that with traditional currency pairs as well. So that's what, bias reduction is super, super important for us in order to look outside of the normal box, and that's why we use the wisdom of crowds methodologies as some of our data point. But finding what was key to us was finding that wisdom in the crowd, and that's what's driven our success and our returns and our product. And hopefully we'll continue to do so.
That's awesome. Rupert, that's a really, really awesome point to probably end today's podcast on. We've gone from everything from trading, crowd-based AI, Brexit pandemic, and childcare. So, I mean, this has been an action-packed 27 minutes. I'm really, really glad to have you on the show today. So thank you very much for coming along. Any last words about Pink, what you're doing specifically in the space, what's kind of coming up, a little bit of a hidden preview to anyone listening to the show?
I would just keep a keen eye on pink.io. Our fourth quarter of this year, we are releasing our new investor wallet, which for the first time anybody can invest in for free into a crowd managed portfolio, and that's really quite exciting. And you can do that from pretty much anywhere in the world as well. So cool. We are one of the very first global wealth management apps to be able to do that.
Very cool. And how do people get in touch with you? Website, Twitter?
Yeah, pink.io. I'm Roo Rambles on Twitter, but I'm usually pretty quiet on there. But by all means, yeah, send me a message on there. LinkedIn's probably the best one. Look for cool. me, Rupert Butterfield.
We'll make sure they're linked on this podcast as well. So thank you very much for listening today, everybody. If you ever like to be a guest on the show, we're looking for new guests for the rest of this season, potentially next season as well. Drop us a tweet at CoinPass Global. Send us an email, podcast@coinpass.com. And one last time, I want to thank my guest, Rupert, for being on the show today. It's obviously great for you to join us, and have a safe week.
Thank you. Cheers, Jeff. No problem.